Can you hear yourself
talking? Yes. Yes. Can you hear me now?
I don't hear you.
Coming up on Thunder Pop.
This is the 124th episode of the Thunder Pop podcast. I'm Stephen Presley, coming to you from the Thunder Pop Dome. And sitting across, or sitting on the screen, on the computer, just in front of me, is the one and only Joe O'Connell from Hutto, Texas. And, yeah, the Hutto Hippos, of course. But out in Hutto, Texas, former journalist and movie critic for the Austin Chronicle, still contributor to the Austin Chronicle, and documentary filmmaker, author, writer, also a great photographer as well. It's great to have you on the 124th episode, returning for, I believe, your third time, but this time it's a little different.
Yeah.
For reasons that we all understand. These things are being done right now. Everything's being done in a virtual. They just had an NFL draft last night, and that was done all on Zoom. So it's a different world right now. But in this episode, we're going to talk about the struggles of filmmakers right now, and creators in general, but especially focused on filmmakers, the struggles of filmmakers right now trying to work during the pandemic. And of course, I know there's people in the world dealing with much greater struggles than that, but we're kind of in our own little, what we cover on this podcast, we're kind of in our own little bubble, and, you know, covering the film aspect of the world and entertainment aspect of the world. That's kind of what we talk about. So we're going to cover that once again today. And Joe, having worked on his previous documentary, Danger God, had been through the process before, but in a much different environment, not having to deal with the obstacles of a pandemic, and now in a much different world, having to deal with luckily you finished the film. Can you imagine that this had all happened in the middle of production? Would that have been maybe a worse situation for you as a filmmaker?
I mean, I would just have to worry about Kirk, my editor, Kirk-O-Matic.
Yeah.
Because we had a nice little editing office that we used to get the film done. And I suppose we would be there wearing masks and where I'm working on it.
And you may be sitting like on the one side of the room, just talking to him, maybe yelling at him over the other side of the room while you're giving him, you know, feedback on the edits.
Behind plastic, wearing my space suit.
Well, we already know Kirk has a hazmat suit, so he would have been able to wear the hazmat suit. So if all
he'd probably be wearing that.
If all else fails, he could have sat there at the editing table and editing desk and wore his hazmat suit. But yeah, you're in a position now where your film was finished, but Joe was about to, and Kirk was about to, Kirk-O-Matic, by the way, was supposed to join us, but we were having some trouble getting the three of us on together today on a video call. So Kirk's going to join me later, and we're going to do like a little bonus episode to talk to Kirk to follow up, to accompany this episode and to follow up on what me and Joe talk about in this episode. But we're going to talk about also what Joe's doing right now, how he's kind of changing his game plan while he's in quarantine. You finished your film. You were supposed to appear at the MegaCon in Orlando April 17th, which was just about, see how many days ago, less than a week ago, you would have debuted. Last Friday, you would have debuted your new film, Rondo and Bob, for the first time over in Orlando.
Yeah.
So you and Kirk-O-Matic would have probably been there together. Not for the obvious reasons, not getting to premiere your film as you were expecting to this month, and having been one of the worst things that happened out of that situation. But another thing is that you didn't get to see Kirk in a Hawaiian shirt and shorts and sneakers in Florida. So there was also
a Rondo mask. We had a plan. We were going to be in Rondo masks running around the convention center. It's a huge MegaCon in Orlando, draws 100,000 people. So we were going to have our Rondo masks, the actual ones from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be wandering around, giving out cards and talking about the movie. And now it has been rescheduled for June.
Yeah.
But I find that very doubtful.
Yeah.
I'm kind of going with the assumption that that will not happen.
Yeah.
Florida.
Florida's different. Florida has,
In Florida, it could happen.
In Florida, it could happen. Yeah. Now, if it goes on and miraculously still happens, are you all still going?
I don't know. I mean, how would we get there? There's no planes.
Yeah.
You know, what I saw the other day is that 5% of planes are flying.
Wow.
So,
isn't that something?
And I don't know if I can talk Kirk into it.
Yeah,
and
that's the thing, because June is not that, doesn't seem like it's that far off. It's not really that far off when you think about it.
No, it's about, the schedule they have is about 6 weeks away.
Yeah.
I can't see in 6 weeks things changing.
Yeah. I'm a wedding DJ. You know? I'm a wedding DJ, and all my work moved off the spring calendar. All my DJ gigs moved off the spring calendar, except for one that's still sticking, and they're waiting at the very end of May. So it depends if they can get the venue to open and the city to allow them to do it. I may be back to having at least have one gig in late May. I'll do it. I may have to negotiate a social distancing deal in my contract. We'll see how it goes, but it'll be kind of tough because not only that, you're talking about the planes not being available and how would you get there and would Kirk want to go along with it and do it with you? But also, would the attendance be, would there be enough people there to make it worth your time?
And would they have to separate them all out? So, only 10 people can come in the theater to see it. I don't know.
It really hurts your promotion.
You know?
Yeah. So it really hurts your, it really hurts the amount of eyeballs you can get on your film that you would have.
Yeah.
So, because if they have to do the spacing out, like you said, they only allow 10 people in the theater. I mean, is it really worth your time to go down to Florida and take all the risks that come along with it and deal with all the logistics? So, I want to talk to you some more about that. And that's kind of the struggle of the filmmaker right now during the pandemic, whether you're still trying to finish a film or whether you're trying to plan a production schedule, or in Joe's case, you're finished with a documentary and now your time would have been to start promoting the film now, and what do you do? So that'll be kind of the thing I want to talk to you about. I know you are doing some pretty resourceful things while you've been you and Kirk have been in quarantine. Kirk, by the way, editor on both your documentaries.
Yes.
Worked with you on Danger Gone, your editor on Danger God, and consultant of sorts, and also the same on Rondo and Bob. But I want to talk about Rondo and Bob some more. We'll open the show with a thunder take. Maybe Joe will have a thunder take for us. If not, we'll see what I can improvise. And then we'll have our usual tropes. We'll have the agree or disagree, thoughts and advice, all that right after this. And we're back. Joe O'Connell, Stephen Presley. Joe, do you have a thunder take for me?
My thunder take is you people need to go out there and make stuff. Or maybe stay inside and make stuff.
Yeah.
Would be the best comment.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think people are thinking about that enough. Just use this time and go make stuff. Do the things you were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe in a life spent making things.
Yeah.
Kirk and Roger Corman is currently having a thing called the Quarantine Film Festival, mm-hmm. and he's asked people to make less than 2-minute films at their houses. Just put it together and do it. And he awards the winner of this. It's all done through Instagram. So I heard about this and I thought, okay, I'll do the stuff that's in my house. And I have the masks that were created by the special effects genius Paul Smith,
mm-hmm.
of Rondo Hatton, we used in the documentary. And so I pulled them out and I made a 2-minute thing about Rondo Hatton. I wrote it. My wife is Mrs. Hatton. My son is Rondo Hatton and wears the mask, some too. And my son was playing trombone, practicing his trombone. We put a little bit of that in.
Yeah. That was great.
And so we just put it together, and Kirk edited it at his house, and we have it out there.
I watched it.
And it was done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on Vimeo.
So, like a day for. Yeah, it's on. There's a link to it. It's on YouTube and Vimeo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can search for it yet or not. It should show up on there. It's called Meet the Creeper.
If you go to Vimeo, it is. I think you can find it under Meet the Creeper now. I don't know about YouTube, but yeah. Meet the Creeper.
Meet the Creeper, which apparently is also the name of a movie or something by Rob Zombie. Because he's a big horror fan, and the posters for one of Rondo Hatton's films, the title above it is Meet the Creeper. And that's why I called it that, too. So he had the same inspiration. So go do stuff. You know, I have all these friends who all they do outside their house is take a daily walk, so they go and take photos. And they're creating great stuff. I take photos every day. I have a deal for the last 8 years. I have tried to have one photo a day. I do the 365 project.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a challenge, so some of them are not that great. But sometimes when you're challenged and you don't have much else, that's the best photo, because you have to really search for it. You know, the days when you're at some kind of thing and stuff is going on is easier. But when you're stuck at home, it gets a little tougher. But maybe that's a good thing.
I think it is a good thing. Because it's some of the best art, you're right, and not just with photography, but some of the best art in general, I think, was created by people when they were put kind of in a little bit of an obstacle course to be able to create it.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you have everything just kind of set up for you, I mean, I know from my example, I sometimes when I have everything just a little bit too easy for me, I take that for granted.
Yeah.
So having the challenge is good.
And Kirk and I are going to do this again, because there is the Austin Art House Film Festival. They're doing a 48-hour film thing.
Yes.
Where you have to make them at home. And it starts today at 5. We're waiting for the name, for whatever it is. And I'm going to write up a script and, go out, shoot some weird images.
Yeah, go out and make it.
Send them to Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have no idea what it will be, but it will be something. We don't know what, you know. But something will have been created.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Get out there and do it. I mean, I was like, I'm going to keep doing the podcast. In fact, I'm going to do more of the podcast, because I'm one of the out of work people right now that are stuck at home. I mean, I am homeschooling my son at the moment, or home preschooling my son. My wife's still working, so there's a lot of my hours in the week that's put into, taking care of my son. But there's some downtime still at home that I would not have normally had, and I'm making stop motion animation movies with my son using all his toys around the house, and we're having a blast.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we just
So you know, I have a podcast every day.
Yeah, I'm starting to work on we just set up our own TikTok account, and I'm starting to make TikTok movies. Me and Kirk are going to do a TikTok movie where I slam dunk a robot into I'm using a robot to play basketball. It's coming soon. But yeah, we're recording podcast. We're doing live stuff. I do a lunchtime live now. I didn't do that before on Instagram. We're doing the podcast. Of course, I'm making some videos. I'm working on that as well. Taught myself stop motion animation. Now I'm learning animation, just regular animation. So trying to learn and, you know, things that you can do. Win the wars you can win today while you're at home. Well, and I would think for the writers, this is their time right now to get a lot of writing done, for whether it's for books or for screenplays or for songwriting, because you're not out playing live shows.
So,
at venues, and if you're a filmmaker, you're probably not, you know, you may be shooting movies, like you're shooting movies at home, but you're not doing big scale productions with a crew. So there's times to write. This is a time to do some writing as well.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some really good ideas that already had some really good ideas come out of the pandemic, but I think there's going to be some incredible stuff down the road that we're going to not even get to see for a couple of years as a result of the pandemic. So it's cool. The Corman Challenge. So that was y'all are going to do the 48-hour film festival that is here in Austin. That's going to start this weekend. I'm looking forward to see you and Kirk come up with that. By the way, now I want to get into Rondo and Bob. And then Rondo Bob is the movie you had finished. We just talked about at the beginning of the show. It was supposed to debut last Friday. Then you all would have been off and running, I assume, with kind of your through the spring and summer with promotion for that film, correct?
Yeah. And then looking for what it was the route for a toward a distributor, and it got out there fairly well. You know, it's tough. It's tough to get things noticed in the marketplace. And Danger God is available on Amazon Prime, iTunes, not on Netflix yet. Mm-hmm. It's most everywhere else, all of those other places.
In quite a few places. Yeah, if you haven't seen Danger God, it's a story of stunt legend Gary Kent.
I wanted to be a pirate, a pilot, a football player, a gangster. I just wanted to be those things. And the only place I could see that happening is in the movies.
Yeah, and so if you haven't got a chance to see that, check it out. It's Joe's first documentary. Now he's working on the second one, he's just finished the second one. That was supposed to be already on its way through different festivals. And I would assume that. So what's the plan now? Do you foresee yourself just kind of waiting things out? Maybe next spring, doing everything you were going to do this spring with Rondo and Bob? Is it just going to have to wait 12 months? I mean, what do you foresee right now?
Even if I'm not sure it's even then, you know, because some people are talking big events may not start until the fall of 2021.
Yeah, I just read that something. Yeah, Disney. Disney World, the theme parks are talking 2021 for maybe not being open until 2021.
So I don't know. I was thinking in some ways, like we did this little short. It's like maybe we need to do a bunch of little shorts and we keep some sort of attention on it as we mm-hmm. move forward.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be in film festivals. I wanted to be in a lot of horror film festivals, even though it is an odd movie because it's half feature film, half documentary, really. Because mm-hmm. we recreated the lives of it's the story of Robert A. Burns, the art director on the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and his obsession with Rondo Hatton. Both guys are dead, so we had to recreate their lives in a lot of ways. We have footage. It all began because when we were working on Danger God, Kirk showed me footage of Bob Burns, and I knew Bob a little bit. Bob killed himself in 2004, mm-hmm. and I knew him starting in about 2000. And then Kirk shows me footage that he shot of him. I thought, wow, this is interesting. Bob Burns had given me a script he had written about Rondo Hatton. And if people don't know who Rondo Hatton is, look him up and you will recognize the face.
Oh, back it up on, I'm going to back up on Bob Burns, Robert Burns.
Okay.
He had, now, is it true that he had cancer leading up to his suicide? Was he already dying of cancer?
That was what he told people, yes. And apparently he was kind of wasting away a little bit.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, Bob was unhappy. He felt that he was incapable of love, and that's mm-hmm. part of our story. Mm-hmm. Because Bob, my elevator pitch, Bob was a normal-looking guy who was weirdly creative. Mm-hmm. He could do anything. On Facebook the other day, somebody came up with a photo of one of his costumes he created for Eeyore's birthday party, which is of a woman carrying a bag of groceries. And his head is a head of lettuce in the bag of groceries. His hands are celery and carrots. And the woman is fake. So it's just an incredible costume. He did all that kind of stuff. I'm not doing a very good short elevator pitch. Bob, normal looking, but weird and creative. Rondo, weird looking, but quite normal. Mm-hmm. An all-American kid. And Rondo found love with this beautiful woman who saw beyond his appearance. But he was, by all accounts, a great guy. People really liked him. He was the super athlete who wanted to be a coach mm-hmm. before this condition hit him. And it also entered his life earlier than would have been expected. Yeah, he lived to his early 50s.
He started off in your former line of work as a journalist, correct? He was writing for a paper doing sports?
He wanted to be a coach. And he started – this condition was happening – and so he became a sports guy, sports writer, mm-hmm. and then he became a news writer. Mm-hmm. And he was in Tampa, Florida, and Tampa was the Wild West gangsters, man. And mm-hmm. he was writing all about that stuff. And everybody knew him. Everybody liked him. He was good at his job. And then a movie called Hell Harbor came to town to film, and they sent Rondo to cover it, to write about it. And the director took one look at him and said, "Hey, man, we're putting you in the movie." And so they gave him this scene as a bar owner in the movie. And Henry King, I believe is his name, the director, said, "You want to come to Hollywood, I can guarantee you a career." You know, and so he went to Hollywood. His wife, the May, this woman he met who's quite beautiful, his second wife, the first wife left him when he was both poor and ugly, which is a line from the documentary. Yeah. And she said, he said, "Well, they just want me from this look I have." And she said, "Well, what do you think it is with the dames in the films, you know, the actresses?" So they went out there and he did like a million small roles. He was in 100 films, but mostly as a guy in the background, a background extra.
Yeah.
And then it turned around and he was going to be a giant star. They said, "We want you to be the new Boris Karloff." Mm-hmm. Signed him to a 7-year contract. And he died before two of the films could come out. And that was it. You know, so kind of a tragic story, but not really, because he had a fairly happy life.
The films he finished that before he died, they did still come out, correct?
Yes, but like the last one, which was called The Brute Man, which is vaguely autobiographical for Rondo, were dumped on a smaller film company because they had some concerns about it, you know, that they were taking advantage of it. So, you know, I don't know that they were seen that much. He was in a Sherlock Holmes film, which is his first big film, and when he became known as The Creep, which is the Pearl of Death. And he was not a good actor by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. He was horrible. He just had an interesting look. And he wasn't that big, so they padded him up to make him look bigger. The condition made his hands, feet, and face huge. But he didn't get it till he was 1920, you know. So, you know, you think of Andre the Giant. He had acromegaly, but he got it when he was young. So his entire body was huge.
Yeah. And that's a person also that used that to get themselves a career as well in wrestling. Now, there's some conflicting views on Rondo's condition, though. There's some people – I know it was originally reported back during that time that it was because of gas exposure, some kind of gas.
Yes.
But that's
Which
not
really probably
what's that?
It probably wasn't true. It's caused by a tumor on the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a thyroid, pituitary gland tumor. That's what it is. And I think it's something that can be treated pretty easily now.
Nowadays. Yeah.
But then they didn't know what to do about it.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's okay now. We're caught. I mean, you certainly know actors who have that condition. The guy who played Jaws in James Bond movies had it.
Yes.
Do you know the show The Jeffersons? It's going back a ways, but
yeah,
there was a character on there who had it, and it had been it had been stopped.
Was that the actor that played Mr. Bentley?
Yes. Yeah, that guy had it. If you look at him, you see it pretty quickly.
Yes, he has a much milder version because, like you said, at that point in time, it was treatable. But he was able to have an acting career not unlike Rondo, but a very different type of character actor.
In researching this, what I was fascinated by is there was a guy in Austin in the 1950s, and his name was they called him Hands, you know, because he had giant hands. Forget what his name is. Someone will call me and tell him his name. Not on a podcast, but someone.
Yeah.
And he was a mechanic and he raced cars. And it's like, this guy deserves a movie about him, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he was beloved in the Austin community, was kind of a badass on the car circuit, on the racing circuit.
Yeah, I didn't even realize there was a race car scene in Austin during that time.
Yeah, well, that's before our time.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds like it could be. There's so many stories when you think about it for documentaries that haven't been utilized yet. Like really good stories like that.
Yeah.
Did you find working on this documentary more challenging than it was to produce the Gary Kent doc? Because obviously a lot of people that may not already know, you're good friends with Gary Kent. So you have access to Gary Kent, being that he's here with us today and he's in Austin. But in this film, you didn't have access to the main subjects. So was that more challenging?
It was more challenging, and I made a decision. With both films, I had a movie that I watched that was an inspiration for me. Mm-hmm. And the first one was a documentary about Robert Evans called The Kid Stays in the Picture. And I watched it, and I don't know if you know much about Robert Evans, but he was quite a Hollywood character. Mm-hmm. And a mover and shaker, really, too. But I watched that and said, oh, what they decided to do was let him tell his story. Mm-hmm. And so as much as possible, I tried to let Gary tell the story. But that movie took me a long time to make because I didn't know what I was doing. And I kept trying to have to hand it over to other people and say, here, make this for me. Mm-hmm. And in the end, I had to realize, oh, I have to do it. And so it's an odd movie, and it's full of all these different film stocks because we're getting clips from all these weird movies Gary did. Gary was a stuntman in B movies mainly, which B stands for bad. He was in, The Incredible Two-Headed Monster, Satan's Sadists, Hell's Bloody Devils, Hell's Angels on Wheels, Satan's Sadists, Dracula Meets Frankenstein, all kinds of, great stuff to watch. You should all go watch it. But he was a guy who just did it. And I had to figure out how to make a movie along the way. And it came in fits and starts, so it took me a long time. Kirk and I hooked up, and he's a workhorse. And we sat down and finished the edit over summer and got it going. So I didn't really plan on doing it again. And when I did, my inspiration for approaching Rondo and Bob was going to see, it's called Becoming Bond. It's a documentary about George Lazenby, and it played at South by Southwest a couple of years ago. And I was there, and I met Lazenby. And what they did with this film was half of the movie was Lazenby standing or sitting in front of a camera being interviewed, nice and the whole thing. And the other half was a recreation of his life with an actor who didn't particularly look like him. And you'll see some reviews hate that idea. I loved it. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do that and stretch myself. So Rondo Bob is halfway a feature film. Mm-hmm. Actors are playing. There's an actor playing Rondo, there's an actor playing Bob, there's an actor playing actress playing Mrs. Hatton, Kelsey Probilski, a local actress who's really fantastic.
She's great. Now, I've seen the trailer, of course. I haven't seen the actual film yet, but I've seen the trailer, and she even in the trailer, she was great.
Yeah, she just steals everything she's in.
Yeah.
It seems like. So we had a lot of fun, and it was a challenge. Challenge to pay for it and a challenge to just go find locations. And we frequently went to the big city of Taylor, Texas, where we were able to find locations and find help. We have a lot of vintage cars. We covered a lot of different time periods in the film. Mm-hmm. We're in the 1930s. We're in the teens, the 30s, up into the 70s. So all these different time periods, and we got vintage cars in the background for different scenes. We have the day that the tower shooting happened in Austin. Mm-hmm. Bob Burns was there, as was Toby Hooper, the director of Chainsaw Massacre. And they both knew each other at that point.
Can you back up on that? I lost you at the beginning of that, where you talk about them being there at the tower shooting. Could you start that again?
Yeah, both Bob Burns and Toby Hooper, the director of Chainsaw Massacre, were at the tower shooting.
Yeah.
They were on campus the day it happened.
Wow.
And they knew each other. So I thought, to me that was fascinating that here is a real mass murder going on. Mm-hmm. And here are the guys who created this classic horror film. And how were they affected by that? Mm-hmm. And the story with Toby Hooper was a cop pushed him into a building and said, get inside. Some guy's shooting out here. And then he turns around and Hooper sees the cop shot and killed. So that stuff is in the movie.
Wow.
And we tried as possible to make what is in here completely accurate. Mm-hmm. Bob could make anything, and he created a pinball machine. He made some movies himself, and one of them is called Mongrel, about rabid dogs. And in it, you'll see a pinball machine that is a deep throat pinball machine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I read Gunnar Hansen, Leatherface's memoir. And in his memoir, he talks about Bob Burns interviewing him in Leatherface. And he did it at his office. Bob had a graphic design office. And he said over at the side was this Deep Throat pinball machine. We found the pinball machine and shot that scene of Bob interviewing Gunnar Hansen with the real pinball machine. It was just amazing that we got to pull that kind of stuff off. We were constantly looking at each other and saying, wow, we did that. Mm-hmm. We got that done. It was cool and fast to be able to do.
You went and shot a lot of it, and you did a lot of shooting in Taylor, correct?
Yeah, just because I kept finding locations. Rondo, the belief is that Rondo Hatton met his wife at a party in Tampa in 1934, mm-hmm. Gasparilla, which is a big festival honoring the pirate Gaspar, who's probably fictional, but in Tampa it's the big event. It still happens every year. Mm-hmm. So I needed a place that could be a spot for a party. And I show my photos at an art gallery in Taylor. And I asked if I could use it. And they said, sure. And I said, and I want you guys to all be extras. So we outfitted the folks as extras. And we shot it on a Sunday night in downtown Taylor, Texas. It's kind of tough because there was a lot more traffic than I thought there would be. They're zooming by. We shot outside mainly. We recreated a whole party. And then I kept just finding that it was the right place to do things. We needed a World War I hospital. Mm-hmm. So I had been into a antique store there, and I liked the windows they had. And so I talked them into letting us take half of a room, pushing everything back and creating a hospital set right there with these big windows. And then, of course, we placed Model T's outside the windows. And it turned out amazing. So you just keep plugging away.
Taylor, of course, has provided a lot of locations for movies over the years. The Hot Spot with Don Johnson, I know it was filmed, quite a bit of that was filmed in Taylor, Texas. Heartbreak Hotel, David Keith from 80s, I think it was around 87 when that came out. That was also Taylor, Texas. A lot of it was shot in Taylor. There's some others.
Yes, I actually was on the set of that movie.
On Heartbreak Hotel?
Yeah.
I like that movie. What did you think about that film after it was finished?
It was okay. I had a bad taste in my mouth about the star because he was kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
On the set.
David Keith?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is that his name? I can't remember. Yeah.
I'm thinking David Keith. I know he was a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. The actor, I remember he was going to preseason Dallas when he was around the time he was filming the movie. He was going up to Dallas and he would hang out on the sidelines of Dallas Cowboy games, and they would give him access to hang out on the sidelines. And I think he even dressed up kind of corny, but he would dress up kind of like a coach, like he would wear the coach's gear. Yeah. And he had the Elvis haircut at the time, I remember, and he would hang out on the sidelines of the games, of the preseason games.
I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah, I haven't heard of him in years.
We're talking about the UT Tower shooting. We shot it at the same place that they filmed a lot of Heartbreak Hotel. Mm-hmm. Which is the old Taylor High School.
Yeah.
Which was closed then too, I believe. And they've been renovating it for other uses. Mm-hmm. And we were able to use that facility to rent it. And it was perfect. It's the closest we could come because we're not shooting that at UT. Mm-hmm. UT is never going to allow.
No, that. No.
So we created, found a great costume person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We found this incredible costume person in Round Rock. Mm-hmm. Really through someone who we were using as an extra in the movie. And he was talking about how he got this outfit from a costume person who specializes in high school musicals and that kind of stuff. Outfits all the high school plays. Mm-hmm. And he said, she's tough, man. You better do what she says. She wants to outfit from head to toe. And she was fantastic. Her name was Ramona Haas, Ramona was fantastic, and I really liked her a lot. And she was meticulous and gave us great costumes. The price was reasonable. She retired and sold her business, and the new people, we used them a little bit, but we mainly had used her. So I hate to lose her.
Yeah. It's hard to find people like that. So when they're not doing it anymore, the music's great. I watched the trailer just again before we started recording today, and I love the music in the trailer.
There is a guy that I'm a fan of that probably no one has heard of. There are two brothers from Dallas. They call the Nirala brothers, mm-hmm. Ferris and Salim Nirala.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a pretty successful regional album as a duo.
Mm-hmm.
But Ferris has had his issues, some mental illness and physical health issues. So they kind of broke off, and Salim is a big-time producer in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a big fan of Ferris, and I particularly love one song called Problematico, and it's a song probably from 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted it in the movie, so I tracked him down. He said, sure. And then I went through the people who have the rights to his stuff and realized I could maybe get more stuff. And so we have like about 9 or 10 songs by him in the film.
Wow.
And I just think he's... It's kind of Beatles-esque sound. He's really good. So I was pleased to be able to do that because that's the kind of thing. If you make a movie, man, you never know what's going to happen in the end. So you might as well get the stuff in there you want.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like with Quentin Tarantino that he puts this music in the movies because it's like, oh, I like this stuff. You know, so you put it in and you try to find a place that it fits.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we did with that. And we also have a couple of guys, a couple of young guys who wrote some soundtrack stuff and who did most of the soundtrack for Danger God. So they came back in and did a few tunes too that were more stuff that we could pick from to put in the movie. It's all instrumental.
In the case of Quentin Tarantino, you would know this rather well. At least his last film, he also made sure to put in his love of feet.
Right. Yeah, they're all over the place. Pretty creepy.
Yeah, it's
really... Yes, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is partially inspired by Gary Kent,
mm-hmm.
the guy in my documentary. Yeah, he went to Spahn Ranch and met Charles Manson and threatened to kick his ass, and a lot of the stuff there, the scene of Brad Pitt going to the Spahn Ranch is very much coming from things that Gary told Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, backing up to the festivals, and your plans were changed like many people in March and April of what you were expecting to be done. Like if I had asked you in early February what your March and April was going to look like, I'm sure it was going to be very different from what actually ended up being. How long do you think it is? I mean, they're saying live events off until the latter part of 2021. Has that been some speculation?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you agree? Do you think that could be the case?
I think what's going to happen is we're going to try to go back too early, and we're going to have a big relapse,
yeah.
And we're going to make it worse. I mean, we've already made it worse in our country than any other country.
Mm-hmm.
China maybe is worse, but they're lying about it.
Yeah.
But we're still unprepared and don't have tests and everything.
Mm-hmm.
We're not ready. Not ready at all. How can we go back if we don't know who's infected?
Well, and what I'm seeing,
it seems crazy to me.
Yeah, what I'm seeing right now is that there's a lot of like people are really split on it. If you look at like states like Georgia, where they're opening everything back up faster than anyone else, but a lot of places, like I was reading an article about bowling alleys, and the bowling alley owners saying, "We're hurting." We really could, we really would like to reopen, but we don't think we should reopen, so we're not going to reopen right now.
Well, that's good.
So
they shouldn't.
No, and so there's going to be that sort of thing where some states will reopen probably a little sooner than they should, but some of the businesses, some people are going to say, no, but we're just going to go ahead we're not going to reopen yet. So I think I can see that being split, and I think there's going to be other businesses they're going to say, "Oh, we're opening again." So there's going to be a little bit of a split on that, on what people do,
it's tough. You got no money, you got to go make a living. I understand,
but I think there's some of the places that are going to be able to be resourceful. Now, live events are tough because live events, that's one where, you know, I think the sports is going to come back without live audience. I think they'll play the sports without an audience.
Yeah, yeah.
I know movies right now are trying to go back into production that were maybe planning to go into production this year. I could see them doing some very specific things to try to keep like quarantine within the film crew. I could see situations like that where everybody stays in the same hotel. Everybody goes from hotel to the movie set and back again, testing everyone weekly if possible. And it's going to be very much like productions that will be quarantined within the production. I think that's the only way they could get back to making movies this year or TV shows.
Maybe they'll make smaller movies, you know, where the crew is three or four people and the cast is three or four people. And that's about it that you have on the set at any time. You could do that maybe. Still space yourself out.
I agree with that. Yeah, I think the technology's there to where you can have a three or four person crew. And what's cool about that is maybe this will be a resurgence for story driven, lower budget movies right now.
Maybe so. Yeah.
Maybe because that's what, like, if you're at Netflix, for example, and you're like, oh, we were going to make the next season of Stranger Things and we were going to do another season of this superhero show that's pretty big budget and has a lot of special effects and has a lot of extras. Maybe they're like, the script that's sitting here is kind of story driven and it only needs four characters. Maybe we'll do that one this time instead. So I could see some situations. Eventually, you know, they have to. These production companies need to make money just like any other business, and they probably need new content to be able to drive eyeballs, and they know people are at home right now. So
I want them to come by Rondo and Bob and put it out in the world.
Is there part of you that wishes you could have had this film done a little, like maybe a year earlier, to where you would already be like in a situation where you're, I mean, is there a chance you might just skip over festivals and try to go straight to selling?
Maybe. In many ways, we did that with Danger God. We went to the American Film Market in Santa Monica, where the action is. I know more than I knew then, too. So, I mean, I got the movie out pretty well, but I would like to be at another level with this one. I'd like to make more money off of it, too. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Yeah, maybe, because I know how to do it. I already know. Mm-hmm. You go... There are four film markets in the world where folks go to sell movies. And people go to film festivals. They put their movies in film festivals a lot of times with the thought that they're going to go find a distributor at the film festival. Mm-hmm. The distributors are all at the American Film Market in Santa Monica. You go there and you make appointments and meet with them, which is what we did. And you know, I got a sales agent and then eventually a distributor that way. But there's only the American Film Market, Cannes Marketplace, Marketplace associated with Berlinale, with Berlin Film Festival, and one in China. And that's it. And I the question is, will those even happen this year? So maybe. But I'd like to do all the film festival stuff. And because I have a movie that has such a built-in audience, Chainsaw Massacre fans are, man, there are a lot of them, and they're rabid about it.
Yeah.
And Rondo, and the top award in the film community is the Rondo Award. So there is interest in Rondo Hatton. There's a new book about him out that's pretty interesting. Two books about him, actually. Last film, The Brute Man, and about his life.
He's all over pop culture. I mean, he was referenced in the Rockford Files TV series back in the 70s. I mean, he's a known celebrity for sure. He's a known entity within the horror, the cult film community. But also, I mean, just he's been referenced and used in so many different things. Also, Rocketeer, the film, right, from the 1980s? There's a character in that film that was based off of Rondo Hatton, correct?
Kind of an homage to him.
Yeah.
Who's the mascot? Famous mascot whose name I can't remember.
Yeah.
But he did it specifically as an homage to Rondo.
Yeah.
We got lucky because we got this guy, Paul Smith, who had worked with Bob Burns, has worked in the film community in Austin and is like Bob in a lot of ways in that he can make anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he created the Rondo masks. You know, they're made on the actor. They're made specifically for our actor. And we were there for the process. It was incredible. Because you make a mold, and then from the mold, he sculpted the mask. And there's a few of them. He should go in the business of selling them after this. We also took Mrs. Hatton because the story was that Bob Burns was the ultimate Rondo fan in the pre-internet era. And so he typed letters on his typewriter and mailed them away trying to find that info. And he tracked down Bob tracked down Rondo's widow and met with her, and she was an old woman.
Yeah.
And so we made the actress into an old woman.
That's in this film,
And we created that. Yeah. And Kelsey, the actress, when she's in that old lady makeup, man, she brought people on our crew to tears.
Wow.
That's why it's a weird movie, too, because it's about, like Danger God, it's about the film business in many ways, but it's also a very personal story, and it's a love story. Mm-hmm. It's the love story of Rondo and May, which is the script that Bob Burns was writing. Mm-hmm. I didn't recreate the script, but you know, I'm going off those elements of the love story between these two people. The love story between the monster and the pretty lady, you know, and she was cool. She was tough, and she really made him a success.
Looks really good. And yeah, I know the film festivals, I hope you can still do them. The film festivals, I know we're going to be a lot of fun for y'all. You were talking about wearing the mask and walking, you and Kirk walking around in the Rondo mask. If it doesn't happen, because it's just going to take too long to be able to get to that stage, I think is a good time for content. People are, I mean, these venues are going to be looking for content. These platforms are going to be looking for content because production right now is off for a lot of movie, for every movie studio right now. Production is down right now. So they're going to need new content in 4, 5, 6 months, 7 months from now. They're going to be like, well, we're kind of running out of stuff right now.
Yeah, we've got decent publicity early. The Chronicle has written about it as a film to watch in 2020.
Yeah.
I was a longtime film columnist, first for the Austin American Statesman, then the Chronicle, then the Dallas Morning News. And back in back at 9/11, it was when my column was pretty much just beginning. It was at the Austin American Statesman then. And I wrote about a film called Jet Blast, which was set to premiere at the Austin Film Festival in November of 2001. And Jet Blast was a comedy about a future where the airline companies were cutthroat competitive, and one of the airlines had outfitted its planes with guns so they could shoot down the competition.
Wow.
And there were planes crashing into buildings. And the Austin Film Festival was going to highlight it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a big film. And it's like 9/11 happened, and they turned around. Oh, and Kirk worked on it, by the way. Kirk was on it. They turned around and said, I'm sorry, you know, we can't show your film. It's not going to happen. And your film is not coming out anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's the wrong time, and you're going to have to suffer. It eventually did come out, but no one's ever heard of it. So I take solace, and it's not that situation.
Right.
Our movie's still a good movie.
Yeah.
It will find its place. You know, it may just take a little while.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's going to find
its place. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, if you were
I want people to know it exists.
If you were filming a scripted movie right now about a pandemic, and you had just finished your pandemic movie, that might be a tough sell. I don't know. I do know that there's sort of a shift in people's sensitivity compared to the sensitivity there would have been with 9/11, because right after this started to break, the pandemic movies were all on the front page of Netflix. All the pandemic movies. As the most watched movies of the week. People
Maybe
there
wanted
actually,
an instruction guide.
They wanted an instruction guide. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a handbook on what you're supposed to do. Because we certainly wasn't getting it from our government, were we?
No.
Still not getting it. Wear a mask. No, everybody wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. Stay at home. No, we're going to open everything back up. But we're going to be open next week. It's kind of been just when you think it's one thing, then no, you do this. Don't do that. Do this.
Thunder Pop was not recorded in front of a studio or audience.
Do you think you'll do any writing while you're in quarantine?
Is that I'm looking to get into a program that to finish a book I've been working on for a good while, which is also film related. And I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you before. It's about a trio called the Ross Sisters from the 1940s.
Yes.
Three sisters who did a song dance routine and contortion. Did we talk about this?
We talked about it. You told me a little bit about maybe it would be something you would consider for a documentary.
I would love to if I could actually pull it off. I don't know if I could. I need somebody else's money.
Yeah.
And a decent amount of it to pull it off. But I'm just going to write the book. And I've been working on it for a good while. So I'm going to finish that. That's my quarantine project.
You'll probably get it done a lot faster now. You'll probably get it done a lot sooner now because of the pandemic and being at home, correct?
I hope so.
Yeah. Now, you're one of the people that are working at home. You're an English teacher at local Austin Community College, correct?
Yeah, I do English and creative writing at ACC. I already was doing some classes online, but everything went online. Mm-hmm. And so I teach classes on Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, I have a creative writing class we meet on Zoom. It's a busy time. And my wife's an elementary school teacher, mm-hmm. and she's having to deal with that. And my son is in seventh grade, so he's having to deal with all this stuff too. So we're all kind of, we're hanging out with each other and not getting too much on each other's nerves.
The internet's really getting stretched at your house, isn't it?
It is. And you know, I noticed, and I think it's getting stretched in the whole neighborhood because everybody's at home and they're on their computer all the time. Mm-hmm. So they need to up our bandwidth a little bit, but I don't see it happening.
Yeah, we could definitely use that for sure.
I'll lose it a lot.
We definitely could use that right now for sure. Do you think there's a situation, you're talking about selling your film and going up to Santa Monica and selling your previous, you know, with the process that you went through, you'd already been through that with your previous documentary. Do you see a situation where the pitches and the meetings for selling movies is going to be done all on Zoom in the next year?
Yeah, maybe so. And a lot of email. I think they're going to be more receptive to stuff that's coming over the transom, coming through email. Than they might have been before.
How do you get your film to those offices? Is it drop shipped? Is it emailed in the cloud? I mean, what happens?
Oh, everybody's movies on Vimeo these days.
Yeah,
it's sitting there with the password, waiting for people to watch it.
So it's just all right there.
That's not a problem.
Yeah,
that's the way all the film festival stuff works too. Is you're sitting there with a Vimeo that's on Film Freeway. Film festivals are a weird thing because, you know, I'm still trying to figure them out. It seems to me that a lot of them are so crushed with entries that if you don't have some sort of personal connection there, then it's hard to make sure your film has actually been watched.
Yeah.
So it's tough. And for the filmmaker, you spend a lot of money entering in film festivals. There's a certain scam level to that you want to try to get past. And it's tough because, Danger Guy was in some festivals that were not submitted at all. The film festival, the MegaCon thing, did not go through Film Freeway. It went through a personal connection who talked to the programmer and said, hey, this is a movie you want. And so that's kind of the way it works in life, it seems like. And so you have to kind of work that middle ground.
So it's having somebody in there that you know that's really the most important thing to get. I mean, it's a big key thing to getting your film in.
Yeah. If you can get a sales agent before you do the film festival circuit, you'd be better served. But, you know, you got to do it for the love of making the story.
It's going to be devastating to play people like the festivals, like our local festivals, like South by Southwest. If they have to be down for 2 years, that's got to be devastating.
Yeah. It's a monster. South by Southwest is a monster.
Yeah.
They have their own building that is a skyscraper pretty much. And it would be a big loss to Austin in general.
It's a
giant revenue source.
Yeah, to the people, the community, the businesses, the small businesses here in town that generate a lot of revenue from that. And then also the people in the entertainment, people that, you know, that work freelance within the festival in various different ways is devastating because I know sound guys that do to do live sound and lighting people and it's devastating to them all the revenue that they lose, the work that they lose. So if it were to happen twice, two times, 2 years in a row, I mean, I would assume South by they probably were going to have to come back after 2 years being down. There's probably going to be some loans involved. There's probably going to be, kind of extending their credit. I mean, I think they'll be back. They're a brand. So I think they're going to be back, but it's going to be tough.
It's going to be smaller.
It's going to be smaller, isn't it? When they come back.
They've laid off a lot of folks, I believe.
If some miraculous way they're able to get back, because it changes month to month, it changes week to week. So what we're being told now may not necessarily be the same what we're hearing a month from now, and it may be better or maybe worse what we're hearing a month from now. But if they miraculously were able to get back by next year, I think that then they'll rebound pretty well. And I think, it might be smaller in terms of like the money they put into it and the planning, because they're going to want to put a lot less money into it, but they're still going to want to get a lot of money out of it. It's going to be, they're wanting to spend less to make more, I guess, is going to be the effort if they come back next year. But if it's down after 2 years, I think then it's really going to be starting all over again in a way. I mean, it's not going to be going back to early 90s South by Southwest, but I mean, it's going to be something more like maybe what we saw in like the late 90s, early 2000s, wouldn't you think?
Where you could find a parking place.
Where you can still find a parking place, yeah. And maybe everything will be, maybe there'll be a little bit of a deal, like a discount on some things. I don't know. But it'll be interesting. I hope, fingers crossed, I hope we can get these events back sooner, just because I know it means a lot to a lot of people, including you and me, and what it does for us and in terms of our morale, but also economically as well.
Yeah. I know South by Southwest, those films who didn't have a premiere. They got offered some deals like on Amazon.
Yeah.
And some of them were balked because they got no money. They would have gotten no money from it. There's a documentary about Guy Clark, the singer, singer-songwriter. There's a documentary about him, and I was looking forward to seeing it, produced by someone who has moved to Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think she's just shelving it for now.
Yeah.
Because she didn't want to take the bad terms. It's a weird thing. I mean, do you suddenly just start showing everything online?
Right.
There are these film festivals, a couple of them in Dallas, that have gone online.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if anybody watched them. You know, I wonder if anybody tuned in. There was the Thin Line Film Festival in Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And went online and made it free. But I don't know if anybody watched it or not.
Yeah.
You know? So as you're the filmmaker, it's like, oh, God, you know.
It's pretty frustrating. You know. It can be pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
We were talked a couple of weeks ago on the podcast about movies that are delayed, the bigger studio films that are delayed that now might have a little bit longer window. Now, delayed in terms of their release date, like their release date's getting pushed back, and some of them having an opportunity to maybe go in and maybe even tweak some things that they saw later that they didn't catch in the beginning or early on, and so they won't be as rushed to have their film ready. Now, I know in case of like the James Bond director, he said, oh, our film's done. I'm not making any changes to it. It's coming out just the same way it would have came out had it been released on time. And he said his case, it's kind of more of a budget. He said, not that there's things I wouldn't want to change, but in terms of like the budget, we just don't want to spend more money. But like some of these other films that were delayed, like I'll give you an example. There's a Ghostbusters sequel. The Ghostbusters sequel that was supposed to come out in the summer, that's not going to come out until March now of spring of next year. A movie like that could maybe have a little more time for the editor and the director to maybe make some tweaks, and maybe it makes for a better film. Maybe it makes for a film that they overthought a little bit and overcooked. But in your case, could you see a scenario where you might go back in with Kirk and see something you might have missed in the beginning and want to make a tweak or two because you have some time now?
Maybe. I mean, it's such a weird thing. When you make something creative, you're never quite satisfied.
Yeah.
You know, we already have a DCP of the movie ready to go.
Yeah.
Because I was going to play it at the film festival. And I sit there watching the test screening and I'm cringing because I know it way too intimately. And I know every little scratch and pop, and some things you have to just let go.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a time where you have to just let go, but maybe in the future, I don't know. It's like with Danger God. Danger God was polished a lot, and there's all these little kinks in it that are still there. But I took charge of that movie, and in the end. I was shooting with a very small camera. I was following Gary Kent as he went through personal problems. We went to the doctor. I pull out the camera and say, is it okay if I film this? As he's talking about heart surgery with a doctor. Part where we go to the funeral of his sister in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's raining. And I had to find a creative way to film that and get past the bad sound that I knew I was going to have. It's like, in the car practicing his eulogy before he went out there and cut the two together.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had to, but I had to do stuff. You had to just do it. And I think with documentary, that's a lot of the stuff that's the best. there's a moment in Danger God that I still think makes Gary Kent uncomfortable. And it was when we were in Seattle and he broke down. It was just the memories of the past as we were driving around. He was a football player at the University of Washington way back when, and we were passing Husky Stadium. And in the car, he started to break down, and I filmed that stuff and put it in the movie. It still makes him a little uncomfortable as a tough guy, you know?
Yeah.
But I got him kind of breaking down. What's important, really, it's what makes people like him so much by the end of the movie.
How is
that
Gary?
He's a human being, so.
How is Gary doing?
Gary's doing well. He's living in South Austin. He moved away for a year, moved away from Austin for a year and was in Arizona. But I think he just wasn't happy that there and didn't know enough people.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a lot of friends here. So he's not liking the quarantine too much.
I bet he's not.
He's a writer too. So he's
writing some stuff
right
now.
He does have his memoir, which has come back out. Yeah, he's writing some things, yeah.
That's good.
He's got a book called Shadows and Light that people can find.
Yeah.
Now, the first book is released in Shadows and Light, and he's working on another one, and I don't know what that will be called.
Oh, that's great. So we may get maybe something else we'll get out of this as a second book finished from Gary. So that's cool. The Agree or Disagree for you, Joe O'Connell, right now, right here. Number one. We're talking about movies and talking about some of the bigger studio films also having to delay their releases, as you're having to deal with as well with your film. Well, the studios, now there's been much talk about AMC and how much financial trouble they're in. And AMC, of course, is the biggest movie studio in the world in terms of how many theaters they have across the globe. Will the studios have to band together and create a bailout for these movie theaters? Now, I talked about... suggested this idea a few podcast episodes ago, and in the case of AMC, that's 600 theaters across the country. So then you imagine how many screens that is multiplied out. So if you're a big studio like a Warner Brothers or a Disney, and you had a big film planning to come out next year or this year, and AMC were to close down, that's 600 less theaters you have to show your film. Do you think there's a situation where the studios, do you agree or disagree, the studios may have to bail out these big movie theater companies?
I agree, but they're also business people, so they'll probably try to take a big cut of the action.
Yeah.
Maybe take ownership of those theaters.
Yeah, I could see that, especially in a case like a big company like Disney.
Yeah. They'll just eat it in their corporate enterprise, you know, and make it part of it. Which may be good or may be bad. I don't, you know, no telling.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll lose a lot of theaters in the process.
What's that?
I'm sure we'll lose a lot of theaters in the process of all this too. And a lot will shut down, much like we're having restaurants shut down.
We're already seeing that in our local community. We seem to almost every week we have a couple that since last month. And I told that to my wife. When this was all starting, I said the businesses that were already working on a thinner margin aren't going to make it through this. Not likely to make it through this. If they were prosperous and doing really well and have some cushion, they're probably going to be fine. I think your businesses like a Taco Deli in Austin. These are businesses that people have taught, you know, in our community would be familiar with. But I think a business like a Taco Deli or a Via 313 that's seems to have some cushion under them are going to be fine. But I think some of these other businesses, like these older businesses, like in the case of Threadgills, where I know the owner was already close to retirement, they're sort of already kind of like, well, we're just going to go ahead and like Kenny Rogers said, we know when to hold them, we know when to fold them.
Right. I just hope the Alamo Drafthouse isn't affected too greatly by all this.
Yeah, and I've had some conversations with people about that too, because I know a lot of many of their locations are franchised, and then there are some that are still owned by the original owner. And some people think that the franchise locations are going to be the ones that are going to be in the most trouble. I mean, what do you think?
That sounds reasonable. I mean, and they may contract. I mean, they've gone through a thing before. They franchised in the past, and then they were unhappy with it and pulled it back.
Mm-hmm.
And this time they've had more control over the franchise.
Yeah.
When we showed Danger God in Arizona.
Yeah.
in one of the Allen draft house there that was from a franchise. Mm-hmm. And I could see them having problems, you know, in the long run from that. Yeah, it's tough. You know, I saw that the Alma Draft House was trying to sell their food,
or you can
come get their food. Yeah, because I love their food. I love to, you know, when I can afford it, they're an expensive proposition to go to anyway. If you want to go and have the food and do the whole thing, which we like to do.
Yeah, it's more of an event. It's a date night when you go to the Alamo because you're going to spend, you know. And it's fun. It's great entertainment. I mean, who doesn't like delicious food served and drinks served to you while you're watching films?
And real butter on their popcorn.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they're trying to do some things. I know they're doing on demand via their website, and they're doing still like the Weird Wednesdays and Terror Tuesdays, so where you can do a pay-per-view kind of like Alamo Draft House version of video on demand. And that was really interesting to me. They're doing the food delivery to your house. You can video on demand the movie and then have the food delivered to your house. I mean, it's clever. It's resourceful. I'm sure it's generating a little bit of revenue for them. I know that they're probably scaled back on their staff that's running that for them right now.
I'm sure they have, yeah.
Yeah. So, but they have rent just like everyone else. These places, these theaters. You know, in AMC's case, at least in Florida, in one community in Florida, one of the major cities in Florida, we've been talking about Florida a lot, but one of the major cities in Florida is right now suing AMC because they told everyone the places where they rent, they told all their landlords they're not paying their rent right now during this pandemic. So in Florida, they're being sued by the landlords right now.
Yeah, it's tough.
So it's tough. It's tough.
And to me, the Alma Draft House to me is the best thing that's happened to Austin in the last 30 years.
It's great.
People talk, right? Yeah. We get all this stuff where people are nostalgic for the past. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's some good stuff going on now. And the Draft House would be at the top of the list for me. You know, it's great to be in a city that has a place like that, that shows funky old movies and then shows new ones. And, you know, in that nice environment with good food and beverage, you know, can't be beat.
It was about 2 years ago. I was traveling for work, but I was in Virginia. I had a day down, like a day where I was going to have some downtime, and I was looking for something to do. And I talked to the clerk at the rental car place, and I said, "What's something I could do in the area that's not too far away? Wouldn't be hard to find." And she said, "Oh, we've got this great thing. You go to the movies, and they serve you drinks and food at the theater. It's called the Alamo Draft House." And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, huh, what a great idea. Who came up with that?
Yeah.
And that obviously for some people, it was like a brand new thing. I think they had just opened this location not too long ago up in Virginia. It was a very nice theater. They had a really nice location of an Alamo Draft House there. And this kind of a domain sort of outdoor shopping area. But yeah, it was kind of funny, just sort of someone from Austin, and they were like, "Yeah, have you heard of this thing? It's called Alamo Draft House." All right, number two, that also happened with Whole Foods when I was living out in L.A. for a little while years ago. People in L.A. actually thought Whole Foods started in L.A. A lot of people in L.A.
Yeah,
no idea.
I was on the set of a TV show that filmed in Dallas. I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. I can't remember the name of the show. Some kind of lawyer show. But Billy Zane was in it. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Billy Zane on the set, and he was talking about the L.A. stuff and mentioned Whole Foods. And I said, "Oh, you know, it's a Texas thing." And he was aghast. Texas thing.
Yes.
Because it was so ingrained in his L.A. personality, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was huge out there in Hollywood. Hilarious.
Hilarious. They've claimed it from us.
So there's a good example there for that as well. Number two, on Agree to Disagree. Now we're getting to talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Gary Kent. Agree or Disagree. So Tarantino recently told a story. He was on somebody's podcast. He recently told a story about when he was younger, the young Tarantino got to visit the set of the original Gremlins film and meet director Joe Dante. So he was working on a project. He was wanting to write a book about directors, movie directors. And so he had worked it out to be able to get access to Joe Dante and go on the set and interview him for his book. So long story on the book, he never finished the book. He said, I was young and flaky. I did the legwork, but I never got the book written, never finished the book. So he did get to go on the set of Gremlins, though. And when he was on the set of Gremlins, the only rule was that he could not see the actual Gremlins because they didn't want them to get out. They didn't want people to see them. So he had to stand behind a barrier. And Joe Dante came up, and they had these curtains up so you couldn't see the Gremlins. So when he came to the set, he was standing behind a barrier, and then they had like some kind of drapes or curtains to hide the set a little bit so you can see. So he actually got to spend a long time with Joe Dante. He said they talked for quite a while because while they were doing the interview or the discussion, one of the Gremlins' heads fell off, and so they were delayed on continuing on their shooting that day. So Joe Dante spent a lot of time with Tarantino while they were trying to put this Gremlins' head on. So what's funny about this was in the 80s, before smartphones, before internet, before TMZ. Do you agree or disagree that it's kind of weird that they made such a big deal out of young Tarantino seeing the Gremlins? Because it's not like he would have been able to do anything about it anyway. It's not like he could have taken a picture of it and put it online. Do you think that's kind of weird?
That is weird. And Joe Dante, by the way, is the director of a Bob Burns film, The Howling.
Oh, wow.
Bob was the art director on that. Yeah. Yeah, he was the art director on a lot of the big films. I don't know, Tarantino. I wouldn't trust Tarantino not to have had a camera in his boot or whatever. Take some kind. They're weird this way. Really a long time ago, 2004, I was on the set of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah,
as a journalist back when I did that column, and they were real weird about me identifying Leatherface and who he was and. Mm-hmm. What he looked like and all that kind of stuff. It's like, I really don't care. Because I wasn't a giant chainsaw fan.
Yeah.
I was more interested in Jessica Biel, who was quite hot.
Oh, I don't blame you.
Presumably still is.
I don't blame you. Yeah. I think so.
So, yeah. And, Robert Rodriguez makes everybody sign a confidentiality form.
Yeah.
When you go in near his stuff. It's kind of crazy.
Very extreme. Well, now, I mean, I understand a little bit more now.
Why?
Well, because of the internet. I mean, the main thing is just confiscating, making sure people don't have smartphones on sets. But other than that, it's fine. They want to see it. That's great.
But yeah, he's just kind of, I forgot what I was going to say something else about that.
About Rodriguez?
This is my comment. People making movies, making small movies like my film Rondo and Bob, will try to keep everything under wraps. They don't want anybody to know they're making a movie. It's like, why not? Kirk and I said, Kirk, maybe we should make this movie. And so the first people we had to talk to were Bob Burns' brother and then talk to his attorney. Those were the first people we talked to. And one of the very first things that happened was I contacted John Kelso, the late columnist for the Austin American Statesman. Many people who appear in Rondo and Bob who have since died, which kind of freaks me out. Mm-hmm. But John Kelso, the longtime Statesman columnist, quickly wrote a column about our movie.
Wow.
And so people were contacting me. And we'd barely begun. So I am not about keeping quiet about it. Immediately upon starting this film, I had a website up, had a Facebook page, all that kind of stuff, because people should know about it. I want something to build. I want awareness to build about it because it's tough to do. So why would you want to hide stuff?
I have an idea. By mentioning that, I have an idea for you. I want to run by. It's a wacky idea. It's related to promoting Rondo and Bob on the internet. It sounds wacky. I don't even want to really, if I want to mention it on the podcast, I might just run it by you later. But I'll just say this. Okay, I'll tell you this. It's going to sound wacky. It's so wacky of an idea, though, it might be something worth looking at. I just took a mastery class online, talking about things we're doing while we're at home. I took a mastery class on how to TikTok like the big viral stars. And I learned a lot from that. The TikTok, you know, you think it's kind of the silly kids, teenagers, high school kids, college kids singing and doing lip syncs. And there's a lot more to TikTok than I ever realized. And it's amazing what people... So it's what I'm trying to say is TikTok has expanded quite a bit demographic-wise. And so there's a larger amount of people on there. And it's the fastest growing social media platform right now of all the social media platforms. And it is a little bit overwhelming when I first got on there because it looks like a bunch of GIFs on your phone, just people moving and jerking around when you get on the homepage. But there's really something there. There's some meat to the bones of TikTok. I just thought it would be, if you did a Rondo with the Rondo mask, some videos with Rondo with the Rondo mask, there could be some ideas there. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh, I think, you know, I thought about that with doing this Corman quarantine film festival deal. You know, it's like I was telling Kirk, well, maybe we ought to make a bunch of these and just see them everywhere so that people are aware of Rondo and Bob. Everything leads back to Rondo and Bob.
Absolutely. I think that you've got this opportunity to do this, and that's what you have right now to utilize is the internet, and you've got the stuff to make. You've proven already that you can make with your resources that you have at your home, and Kirk as well. And you can even throw the net out a little bit and have maybe get other people involved. Maybe somebody you know shoots something at their house to contribute to what you're doing and sends that footage to you, and you edit that into what you're doing. Maybe you have maybe there's a Rondo and Bob film festival. I don't know. Online film festival. I don't. It's where different people make a Rondo short.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. I'm totally thinking out loud. The TikTok idea sounds wacky, but there could be something there. Okay, I got one. I got another one for you. A last one on agree or disagree. Indiana Jones. Are you a fan of the Raiders of the Lost Ark? Did you like those movies?
Yes.
Oh, you enjoyed the Raiders of the Lost Ark. So you for sure.
I you know, it's a weird thing because this thing they created was an homage to something from the past.
Yeah.
Much as Star Wars was,
yeah,
you know, they're looking back on the old movie serials from those directors' childhoods, you know, and it seems like that's what's always happening. Maybe that's why Chainsaw has so many fans, because people are looking back on their childhood and what they liked when they were kids. You know, Stranger Things; those guys were not even born in the '80s or the early '80s, when it was set, but they do a great job, you know.
So,
you know, I always think of Raiders of the Lost Ark, that giant boulder that comes at you. And I saw that on the big screen. And when that giant boulder, jeez, scared the hell out of me.
Oh, it's great. The intensity that he brought with that. And also Indy's fear of snakes and how they made that. Kind of where you could feel his fear, and it made it, even if you weren't afraid of snakes yourself, you felt his fear, and it worked to where it kind of like you could feel his pain dealing with the snakes in the film. Well, here's what's that?
And the great scene where the guy is flipping the sword around and about to attack Indiana Jones, and then Indiana Jones pulls out a gun and shoots him.
Oh, yeah. That's.
I find that incredibly funny.
That's still to this day, it still works for me whenever I see it and repeat. It's still hilarious.
Yeah.
So as you may know, or may I'm sure you knew that it's been in pre-production hell for quite a while now, making a fifth Indiana Jones film.
Yeah.
And of course, originally the delay was that Steven Spielberg was going to direct it, but that he was working on a remake to West Side Story, and he didn't want to start on Indy until he finished his West Side Story project. Then he finishes West Side Story, and then the next thing is, Steven Spielberg is not going to direct it now. We're going to maybe get this director from Logan to direct it instead. He's a great director. Maybe Spielberg wants to let somebody new maybe take a shot at it. So now the pandemic. So yet again, it's being delayed, and it's probably delayed now, not even going to start filming. It was originally, they were hoping to start filming it this year, probably not start filming now until 2021. Do you agree or disagree that this film may just be cursed, no pun intended there, with Indiana Jones? And is it doomed? Again, no pun intended there, actually. But is this film doomed? Do you agree or disagree that Indiana Jones 5, at least with Harrison Ford, I mean, Harrison Ford is, what, 80, 82 now, I think?
Is he that old? Wow. Yeah.
I might be aging him a little bit, and obviously he looks great. If you can keep him out of airplanes, he's going to be. If you keep him away from flying airplanes, I think he's going to be great. He's in good health. But do you agree? Disagree? This film probably is just not going to happen. It just seems like it's doomed.
Seems like it won't happen. Yeah. And speaking of the curse thing, I mean, this is a concern for me with Rondo and Bob.
Yeah.
Because Bob Burns clearly was cursed. Bob Burns, he kept trying to make movies on his own.
Yeah.
And they were cursed. And he starred in a movie. He wasn't really known as an actor that much, but he starred in a movie called Confessions of a Serial Killer. Mm-hmm. And at the same time as his movie, another movie came out called Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer. They were both about Henry Lee Lucas, a mass murderer from this area. And it's like everything was destined to screw up for him. And so I hope it hasn't rubbed off on the documentary too much.
Well,
we have had a lot of people a lot of people involved with it have died.
You have good mojo, though, with you and Kirk, because you and Kirk have both finished films before. So I like the 2 out of 3 on that.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a big thing of just – and Kirk has that attitude. Here's a guy who's been, you know – he's an old Access TV guy, and he's been running around the film business in Austin forever.
Mm-hmm.
But he has the attitude of, just go do it, man. Just do it. Quit talking about it. Go make your movie.
That's always been his attitude about everything. Just go do it.
Yeah. And he always tells me that he thinks I'm real lucky. So, oh, you're lucky. You get these sets. Get these locations. You know, we tried. That's all it was. We just tried, you know. He's lucky. You're lucky you're getting the movie out there. It's on iTunes and everything. You know, other people don't get that. It's like, want more.
some of luck is the mindset, confidence. I mean, I hate to sound so cliche, but it's the mind over matter in some cases.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Because I know a lot of people that were unlucky, but they really did believe they were unlucky. And if you believe you're unlucky, you're probably going to be unlucky. If you believe you're damn lucky... I just think I hate to sound so hokey and so like mind over matter, but I for a couple of years, I just like, you know, I'm going to win. And I kept winning these drawings. I was winning like small prizes. Mm-hmm. We had a house full of small prizes, and I swear I wasn't stuffing these boxes. I have our art piece in our house. That's the mural, Austin mural.
It's great. I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. We won that at the Blue Janie Bazaar. That when I was having my winning streak there, I kept winning. So it's mind over matter. I kept thinking, oh, I'm going to win some more stuff here pretty soon. I'm going to keep winning. Yeah. I'm a winner. I'm a winning guy. Yeah. I think it's a lot of the attitude of mind over matter. I don't know if a person can take a voodoo doll and curse you and give a person bad luck. Yeah. I don't know if I believe in that superstition. I wouldn't question them on it and challenge them to do it. I wouldn't dare do that. But yeah, I think you're a lucky guy too, though. I think you're a lucky guy, but I think you also, like you said, you also go out and do it.
Just got to do it. I think we curse ourselves.
We can. I mean, there's
by doing the opposite you're talking about.
Yeah, and there's global things. Like, obviously, the pandemic is something we're all going through. None of us had any control over that.
Yeah. I had a friend at one time who told me, this is the best I'm ever going to be, and I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, man. You're just basically saying you're dead. you know, keep trying and doing things that you want to do. I've entered a phase where I just want to concentrate on making stuff and doing things that I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, so I try to do that. And so with the movies, I freak Kirk out sometimes because – one of the nice things with Rondo and Bob was the ability to do, you know, it's like I could visualize something and then we could go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the movie, The Third Man. And The Third Man, there's a scene in the sewers of Paris. And the sewer, it's brick on the walls, curving wall with this brick, beautiful lighting. And I thought, man, I want that with Rondo Hatton. I found out, of course, later that was all done in a studio. that that was a set. I thought it was the real thing.
Wow.
And so I told Kirk, I said, yeah, I want to do that. He said, well, you know, there's stuff down on Waller Creek in Austin that's kind of like that. And then he says, well, they're doing some kind of light show down there. So, and he told me he just doesn't expect me to say this, but I just go, oh, okay, let's do it. And so we showed up with our actor in the Rhonda and Paul Smith, the mask designer, and Kirk and I. And that was it. And there's a there was a giant event, crowds going through this light show in the tunnels along Waller Creek downtown. And I just held the crowd back, and we would get Rhonda to walk through it. And then we went to the really horrible part of the creek where there was old underwear and poop all over the ground. People were living there. They could see the guys on the other side of the creek that were lurking, and it was dark. And we shot Rhonda walking down it. And the beginning, that is the beginning and ending of the film.
Yeah, that's cool.
Those two scenes of him walking down the dark thing. And at the end, it's him walking through the lighted stuff. And the lights would go bing, 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 you know, on as they went down, and then they flashed off. And that's how we end the movie.
That is cool.
And so you could say that's lucky. We went ahead and did it. We gorilla'd it, you know.
You still had to do it.
I don't know if there would be anyone to ask. Yeah. I don't know if we could ask permission of anyone, but it'd be better off just going and showing up and doing it. We did. And people were taking photos of it, you know, like, oh, yeah, this movie is filming down here. This guy Rhondo. I don't know who Rhondo is. I'm sure those photos appeared somewhere. People shooting.
Guerrilla style filmmaking.
Yeah.
Long story short, long story, but I'm going to have a taco truck in front of my house in about an hour, and I'm going to DJ from my balcony. We're going to do a social distancing taco hour on my cul-de-sac. So
that's cool.
My friends of mine have a taco business, or they have a restaurant, two restaurants in South Austin, and a lot of local businesses. They're trying to find ways to stay afloat. So they've been doing these pop-ups where they come to neighborhoods and sell tacos. People order them on their phone, like they do a text order, and then they go down and pick them up when they're ready, and they take one person at a time to come and get their order. And I'm going to play music on the balcony for them while they're here. So we're going to go do that at 5 o'clock.
That's cool.
Yeah, so we're going to do that.
Good luck.
Yeah, it should be fun. We'll keep our fingers crossed it all works out, but everybody's going to wear their mask, which means, remember, I now, in what world are we in now? I've got to remember to go take my mask out of the washer and put it in the dryer. So I'm about to go do that. We're going to wrap up. Before we wrap up, I've got this thoughts and advice right now. And we want to, coming to us in this thoughts and advice, we've got a special guest, the one and only Kirk-O-Matic, as me and him try and attempt to do a video chat with each other. Listen in on this. This should be fun.
Kirk, I'm here. I can hear you. I don't know why your voice don't work.
I can't hear you, Kirk. What are you doing to the mic?
It's just because I don't have high speed. You have high speed.
Now I don't hear you again. I heard you for a second.
It's because you have high speed and I don't.
Can you see me?
You don't have your volume on. You don't have your audio on. You are muted. I can see that you've muted it.
Can you see me?
You're mute. You have no mute. You are muted. You've muted your audio. I can see that you...
Okay, I unmuted. Can you hear me?
Okay, now I hear you. Now I hear you.
Okay, I don't hear you now. Kirk, your background is too bright. I can't see you now.
Can you see that? I'm working on a video.
I don't see your face.
Oh, okay.
Now I just see your nostrils.
Nostrils? That's some nostrils fun?
All I see is nostril cam. It's nostril cam.
Nostril cam, that's a great video.
Okay, you have nose hairs.
Okay, now, did you see that? I'm working on a video here, man.
You need to pluck those guys.
And there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Thoughts and advice. Joe O'Connell, Rhondo and Bob, Danger God already on many major platforms. Rhondo and Bob hopefully coming to you sooner rather than later. But I want to thank you, sir, for joining me on this 124th episode of the Thunder Pop Podcast.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
And, all right, Joe, you take care of yourself. Be safe, be well. And everyone out there, have a good day, hour, second, millisecond, and goodbye. And Thunder Pop is a Hit the Bricks production.
I went to get cheap water. It's 94 cents for a gallon of water.
At Walmart?
At Walmart.
Yeah. And HEB? What'd you go to HEB for?
Well, HEB is a cleaner place.
Yeah.
So, if you want everything, see, Walmart has empty shelves like Auschwitz and Russia.
Huh.
And so when you go to HEB, all the shelves are full, except for the Purell, and except for, well, they got crackers, they got all the paper goods. You know, and even if you go into Central Market on South Lamar, it's packed. Everybody's rich. They don't care. I went in the back way of Central Market, and they told me that you got to go around front to be washed down before you get to touch the cart.
What?
They're washing down the carts, and they're taking their gloved hands, and they're taking your hands, and they're putting goober on your hands, and making sure your mask is clean. Before you get to go in the Central Market, it's like Auschwitz Central.
What? That's crazy.
They've got super Nazis out front making, and they're all dressed in hazmats, and they're making sure that you're a clean machine before you go into that dress rehearsal.
Good God.
But when you go into Walmart, it's so poor, they don't have any guard out front. They just got everything stringed with yellow tape and hope that you don't get any kind of disease walking into that joint.
Walmart's like the Hunger Games.
It's a Hunger. Oh man, yeah, it's like a Hunger Games. You better watch out. You better watch out, man.
You're gonna be the what do they call it when you get picked to be in the Hunger Games? What's it called?
6 feet away. You gotta stay 6 feet away from everybody. You gotta follow all the arrows. I went down the wrong track, and these two goobers with their chart carts, because they were doing all the cart work. I wish they'd get rid of those guys, those stalkers at night. They're doing the curbside, and I said, you need to go out there and go in the back and get your curbside stuff and stop bothering us. And where is the tomato sauce?